Voilà, så. So for our meditation session this afternoon, I'd like to do something different. We'll take the very next passage from the text, which is Kamajame Rinpoche himself explaining the sadhana, in his own words, of Avalokiteshvara. And I'll simply read that. That will be our meditation. He was offered it as a meditation, so we'll accept it as it was offered. But I know that such sadhana practice in general, people receive it or engage with it, interact with it, how should we say, in very different ways. This is completely normal. But I would like to throw off some misconceptions. The notion that this is simply a cultural artifact. We, coming from just being sentient beings, let alone coming from the modern West, which is very not Tibet and very not medieval India, but just as sentient beings, we're approaching the Dharma with the problem, not the solution, and the problem is called dualistic grasping. Dualistic grasping. And that is just whatever we approach, we kind of say, well, what is it? Is it really, here's totally ordinary English, was it really there or was it just in your mind? That's perfectly good English, right? Is it really there or is it just in your mind? As if, you know, like, that's totally sensible what I just said. It's not. It's gibberish. It's like, blah, 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 blah. So it'd be good to get over that. It's called dualistic grasping. It's the root of all suffering. It'd be a really good habit to kick out. Because an Avalokiteshvara is not really out there. Of course not. Not floating around on some Avalokiteshvara cloud nine, casting little sprinklings of fairy dust all over the place. No, nowhere. But it's not just an artifact of your mind either. It's not just your pristine awareness. It's not just subjective, and it's not just objective. That's kind of the whole point. Rigpa is not subjective. Rigpa itself is not subjective. And of course it's not objective. The guru, is the guru really simply your own pristine awareness, or is the guru really out there? It's just keep on asking the wrong question long enough, and you might just stop asking the question. Yeah? Avalokiteshvara is not simply a cultural artifact, nor is Avalokiteshvara simply your own pristine awareness, nor is it simply a Tibetan deal, nor is it Tibetan simply an Indian deal. It's not really a deity out there. It's not. No, just take it for what it is. So we'll go through it. I'm not going to talk about it a lot before the practice. I'd like to just go into the practice, but I'd like to invite you to have an attitude when you do so. Knowing we're just of different dispositions, different predispositions, predilections, and to approach the practice with a total confidence that that's really okay. You know, I've been hanging around in Dharma circles for 45 years now, and some people, and especially traveling, you know, across many different cultures, and just some people are just naturally gravitate to the devotional practice. That they love the ritual, they love the chanting, they love the bells and the liturgy and the ritual and the colors and the art and the iconography. They just love it. They revel in it. They revel in it. And other people just revel in the intellectual power of the Buddha Dharma, the Madhyamaka, the interface with the Yogacara, you know, the Mahamudra, the Dzogchen. They revel in that. Some are really just love the shamatha. They just love going that. And others really don't have much interest in meditation at all. They just love being manifesting in the world in benevolent ways and trying to be of service in myriad ways. And that's their dharma. And among those four modes, is anybody really bold enough to say which one's the better one? I'm not. I'm in no position to say that. So even within this room, clearly everybody who is in the room here has a predilection for meditation, otherwise you're not going to come on an 8-week retreat. But within that context, there's a lot of variation, right? So in approaching this, here's what I would suggest you not do. Don't bring any of your preconceptions to it. I know it's hard, but why not? You know, what's it cost you? Just leave them at the door. And we'll simply be following Kamajame Rinpoche's guidance, and this is I've received. I'm giving you the oral transmission from Gyatro Rinpoche, who is a lineage holder of this Beyul tradition of Karma Chame Rinpoche, the union of Mahamudra Dzogchen, as well as, of course, a lineage holder of the Dujom lineage. Oh, so the lineage is there, the blessing is there, the current is there. And I'm simply passing it on. I'm a pipe, messenger service, whatever you like. No real significance as long as I can just deliver the goods. It's kind of like, give me a tip. I'm delivering it to your door, here's it. Give me a tip, like a tip would be practice. I don't want your pocket change. But your tip is practicing. That's otherwise why would I be teaching? I don't need to talk compulsively. So coming back, Hamashama Rinpoche, I was reading up a little bit on him just on the internet. Didn't know that much about his life. Apparently profoundly accomplished in the actual practice of Avalokiteshvara. So there are great gurus who are not simply conduits, like I'm not a great guru, but I can be a conduit, that I would claim. He was not just a conduit, he was like, he embodied this, he realized it, He was embodying Avalokiteshvara. So there are such great beings, And then the rest of us, little pipsqueaks, on the lineage, then we just pass that on and try not to mess with it on its way through. But you can get it right there from Gyatri Rinpoche right back to Kama Shama Rinpoche. So, but here's the point I'd really like to get, and that is just, as I'm reading through it, just be light. Light like a butterfly. No expectations, don't burden yourself with think, I should be feeling more, I should be visualizing better, I should be feeling greater devotion, I'm not really feeling my heart bursting with, why do you not do that? I'm not helping anybody. Just go into it as rulpa, rulpa. Rulpa, Tibetan word, nice word. Play with it. Just play with it. Play with visualization and just see what happens. And what happens, happens. What doesn't happen, doesn't happen. And that's fine. I've spoken personally with a lot of you now. There are no defective people here. Any more than, we're all just defective because we're in samsara. But, none of us are mentally impaired that we just don't have the ability to do for this. We're just practicing sentient beings. We're fine. And there's a lot of variety, which is as it should be, So just be happy with who you are already. It's good enough. You're already good enough to practice Dharma. And that's all I need. So rulpa, rulpa. Play with it. See what happens. If nothing much happens, well, consider, I got some merit. That wasn't too hard. Where's the downside, So find a comfortable position. You can be lying down if you like. Generally a bit better to be sitting up, but if you're uncomfortable, it's not better to be sitting up. Let's ease our way into the practice, always with this very welcoming entrance. That sigh of relief as you let your awareness descend from that nest of concepts in the head. Coming down to the quiescence of the ground, the earth element. As you feel your shoulders drop, your face relax, the eyes soften. Settle your body, then your breathing, then your mind in the natural state as you've done before. Come home to that still place where your awareness is at rest, clear and still, as free from grasping, as free from reification as possible. And then we turn to the guided meditation of Kamacha Merumachi. The public dharma of the Blessed Lord, the Great Compassionate One, is to be cultivated as the stage of generation after having cultivated the spirit of awakening, or bodhicitta. So right now, let's pause. And arouse his aspiration that you yourself shall achieve the perfect awakening of a Buddha, replete with all the qualities of Buddha's body, speech, and mind, in order to affect sentient beings on the path. And all are free, all are awake. Arouse this jewel of a mind, bodhicitta. Now we let our imagination play. And playfully imagine your own awareness, your own pristine awareness, indivisible from emptiness, the Dhammadhatu, the absolute space of phenomena. Imagine your awareness taking on the form. As Kamacha Merumachi says, imagine a white syllable, hri, as the seed of your consciousness. That which is formless takes on the form. Radiant, white, hri, the seed syllable of Avalokiteshvara. From the hri are emanated white rays of light in the 10 directions, striking all sentient beings, and thereby purifying their sins and obscurations. So imagine a cascade of light going out in all directions above and below, to all the directions on the side, around, throughout space, from this inexhaustible source. In this realm of possibility, imagine these light rays striking every sentient being throughout space and instantly purifying them. All negative karma, all obscurations in an instant vanished. Then vividly imagine the realm of the external universe and all the sentient beings who inhabit it as the Great Compassionate One. Again, letting your imagination play, imagine the entire universe and every being who inhabits it, all as the embodiment of Avalokiteshvara. All of space being sacred space, all beings emanations of Avalokiteshvara. Drawing the light rays back in, they dissolve into the syllable hri. and you are that Ri. Your own awareness indivisible from that Ri. As the result, the Ri on a lotus sun and moon disk or moon seed melts into light. So imagine beneath you the lotus, on that the moon, the sun, on that the Ri. And with the convergence of light from all directions in upon yourself as the Ri. This Ri syllable, the seed syllable of Avalokiteshvara melts into light. From which you vividly imagine yourself as the great compassionate Lord, Avalokiteshvara, the embodiment of the compassion of all the enlightened ones through all the three times. Imagine taking on that form, this archetypal, quintessential form. How are you present? Your body is white with one face and four arms. You're smiling like a blossoming lotus. The locks of your hair are bound up in braids and they are adorned with a crown of five kinds of precious substances. You wear a silken diadem. The palms of your first two hands are joined at the heart. It doesn't comment here, but between your palms you hold a wish-fulfilling gem. To fulfill the wishes of all sentient beings in their aspirations for awakening. You hold it in the palm of your hand. These are your two upper hands. In your lower right hand you are turning a pearl rosary, and in your left lower and your lower left hand you hold the stem of a lotus. So white pearl rosary in the right, holding the stem of a lotus in the left. You're adorned with a collar band. All of these are jeweled ornaments. You're adorned with a collar band, a neck band, a necklace composed of various precious substances. You are seated in the cross-legged position. The full Vajra Asana, or lotus position. If viewed from the outside, you are inwardly luminous. And if viewed from the inside, you are outwardly luminous. Truly a body of light, from within and from without. Imagine that various rays of light are shining forth from your body. That visualization is the generation of the samayasattva, the samaya being, your outer form. As for the visualization of the samadhi sattva, or more inner form, imagine a white tri on a moon disk at your heart. This can be quite small, like a moon disk the size of a large coin. And in the very center of that, standing upright, facing forward, is a syllable tri. You can visualize this in Roman letters, but at your leisure you may find it more interesting and suitable to visualize the Tibetan syllable Ri, the white Ri, standing upright upon this moon disk at your heart. And imagine the syllables Om Mani Padme Hum circling it in a clockwise direction. So these syllables face inwards, they're on the periphery of the moon disk, clockwise, Om in the front, Om Mani Padme Hum, just six. Each one standing upright, like six people surrounding a king. And each syllable emits its own sound. Om Mani Padme Hum Hri. That is the Samadhi Sattva, the inner sanctum within this temple of your body, which is the Samadhi Sattva, rather the Samaya Sattva. This is the Samadhi Sattva. With the recitation of Om Mani Padme Hum, imagine that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of the Ten Directions and all the Suggatas of the Three Times, in the nature of the Great Compassionate One, unceasingly descend upon you and all sentient beings like snowflakes. That is the dissolution of the Jnanasattvas, the primordial consciousness beings, Jnanasattvas. So quietly now, just for a couple of minutes, mentally recite slowly, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. And as you do so, imagine the Buddhas of the Three Times, the Ten Directions, taking on the forms, myriad forms, of Avalokiteshvara, dissolving into your own body, dissolving into the bodies of all sentient beings. They say like snowflakes falling upon a lake, descending upon your body and immediately dissolving indivisibly. Body, speech, and mind with your own. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Imagine that the mantra you're reciting is actually emerging from these syllables at your heart. Imagine your guru is in the form of Avalokiteshvara, dissolving into you. With respect to the phenomena, as the presentation of the divine body, think of the outer environment and the sentient beings who inhabit it as being the great compassionate one, just as you've imagined yourself. So in other words, imagine now no duality between yourself as an embodiment of Avalokiteshvara and the world that you inhabit and all the sentient beings within it, all of one nature, non-dual, equally pure. This is with respect to the phenomena or the forms of the environment and all those who inhabit it. And then, with respect to sounds as the presentation of the divine speech, imagine them as the sounds of the six syllables. Imagine the six syllables of Om Mani Padme Hum taking on all the forms of that arise in the environment, both articulate and inarticulate sounds. All expressions of the speech of Avalokiteshvara. With respect to memories and thoughts as the presentation of the divine mind, recognize them as a self-arisen primordial wisdom, the union of appearances and emptiness. Which is to say now, most inwardly within the space of your own mind, whatever thoughts and images, whatever mental events arise, view them, imagine them as expressions of Rigpa, the mind of Avalokiteshvara, all equally pure, seen from the perspective of Rigpa. You will gain mastery over the reality of the one taste of the many intellect-transcending presentations of the phenomena of the divine body, speech, and mind. So dwell, just for a moment, in this pure vision, consisting only of pure appearances, with the divine pride of being Avalokiteshvara in the center of your mandala. Linger there for just a moment. This wish-fulfilling jewel, sadhana, is to be taught as a public dharma to all the six kinds of beings. When the Father's spiritual mentor and his spiritual sons don their crowns, they grant this as a public dharma. He's referring to the Kamapa and his closest disciples. They grant this as a public dharma. As we come to the close, dedicate the merit, Gyawadi Nyudu Da Chen Re Siwan Tupkyone, Doa Chikyam Manu Pate Salakuparushu. By the merit of this, may I swiftly actualize the Lord Avalokiteshvara. And may I bring every sentient being without exception to the state of awakening. So this Om Mani Padme Hum is not simply an array of sounds. They, of course, have meaning. And great scholars, great adepts have written many commentaries on this mantra. I'm neither a great scholar nor a great adept, but I can add a few comments. So at least if you have no idea what it means, I can give you some impression. So the six syllables are often associated with the six realms of existence. So I won't give the detail of that, but just looking at the syllables themselves. Om, consisting of three parts, a-u-m, symbolizing the Vajra body, speech, and mind of a Buddha, and the inseparability of the three. So it's really manifest. When a Buddha manifests, as a Buddha Shakyamuni and so forth, they're manifesting their form. Manifesting the speech and the form are indivisible from the mind. So it's kind of like manifest Buddhahood, Om. Often it's associated here, the crown chakra, and that crown chakra is often associated with body embodiment, something you can see, something manifest. You can actually encounter it, you know. And then Mani, of course, means jewel. And Padme is in the locative, so it means in the lotus, jewel in the lotus, you've all heard that. Jewel in the lotus. But that maybe it's time to play again. Jewel in the lotus, a lotus. You've all seen lotuses. I've seen many in China, Tibet, and so forth. Coming out of very often quite swampy, kind of murky, than the ones I've seen. Pretty murky water, swampy water. And then you see that even if the water is very smirky, even if it's polluted, it bursts there, you know, comes there's that opening. And then it arises and doesn't matter how murky the water is, when it comes up, it's just completely pure. You've seen that? Even if the water is murky, it doesn't come out of a murky lotus. It comes out, it's just beautiful, just pure, like white. They come in different colors, of course, white lotus. But imagine then that you've got it's the root, of course. It goes down to the lake bottom, right? Down into all that muck, yucky muck down at the bottom. So the roots are down there in the muck of samsara, the dreck, the sludge, where all the sedimentation is. That's where it's getting its nutriment. That's where it's getting its source. Where does compassion come from, after all, if it's not attending to the world of sentient beings? This is why, in the uncommon preliminaries, you recall how really going deeply into pure vision, pure identity, and all of that, yourself pure, the guru pure, your Vajra siblings, seeing them as Viras and Dakinis and so forth. But when it comes to sentient beings, then you do this kind of 180 degree. Instead of viewing it from your assumed divine perspective, divine pride, pure vision, you just go, and you're viewing sentient beings as sentient beings. You're viewing sentient beings as they view themselves. Right? And they are not thinking of themselves with divine pride. They're not thinking about Pure Lands. They're not thinking about Om Ma Hung. They're thinking about how to pay the rent. They're thinking if they're a deer, how to find some grass, if they're, and so forth and so on. They're each operating out of their own mandalas, which is in an ocean of samsara. And it is pretty much saturated by suffering. And so we switch that. Well, that's the mud, that's the root system. That's where the root system of compassion is attending to the world of sentient beings. But it arises from that. So you can imagine this like in kind of like, how do you say, time-lapse photography. Imagine a lotus coming up, from the way down there. Coming through the water, getting clear, coming up to the lighter, less sedimentation, less clear, and then finally breaking the surface into the clear air, clear blue sky, the sunshine, opening up, and then, surprise, there's a lotus inside. There's a vajra, there's all kinds of things, but here's a mani. Om mani peme hung, not om vajra peme hung, or vajra, etc. But there it is, the lotus opens, and there's a jewel. Well, what kind of jewel? Wish-fulfilling jewel. So that's a very simple imagery. It's a very simple symbolism. Some of the mantras are very long, sometimes multiple mantras with the same deity and so forth. This one's really simple. That's really all you have to hold in mind. There's the Om sets the stage. And then Mani Padme, or Padme, that is, there's the jewel in the lotus. You never know it, though, if we kind of follow the imagery. When it's under the water and it's all closed, you have no idea there's a jewel in there. It just looks like a plant coming up. But then it breaks the surface. As you're cultivating bodhicitta. This is called the evolving Yegyorki Sangikarik, the evolving, the expanding, the developing bodhicitta, or Buddha nature. Yegyorki Rik, the evolving, developing, maturing, ripening Buddha nature. And it is transforming over time. It is evolving. It's maturing. It's moving along the five paths, the ten bhumis. It's moving along the Bodhisattva path, Arya Bodhisattva path, the Arya Bodhisattva bhumis. It's growing. And then finally, poof, and lo and behold, there inside altogether was the Ranjin Nirik. Boy, I'm remembering these terms from like 40 years ago. Ranjin Nirik, the Buddha nature that is just naturally present. Ranjin Nirik. It's always there, and there was no evolution, there's no transformation, there's nothing to be added or subtracted, nothing to be modified. It's Rigpa. And it was always there, right in the heart of the lotus. It was never anywhere else. It was always there, never to be achieved, never can be lost. It can only be veiled or unveiled. And there it is. That's your ultimate bodhicitta right there, that wish-fulfilling jewel. And the relative bodhicitta is holding it. I find that very moving. Om Mani Padme. And then Hung. We started this manifest, the manifest body, speech, and mind, and then we end on Hung, this deep blue indigo. Hung, of course, symbol of Buddha mind. Dhammakaya, just right down to the depths. We end on Buddha nature, we end on pristine awareness. So that's it. I mean, so much is summarized there. That's the whole path, really. All of us have come to this retreat, people listening to the podcasts from afar. Why? Because we're suffering. If we weren't suffering, we wouldn't bother. We'd be so happy, we'd be content, just, hanging out, enjoying being so content. Right? If there's no suffering, there's no renunciation. No renunciation, no bodhicitta, no bodhicitta, no enlightenment. That's where the root system is. So that's the simple mantra. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. It's interesting, there's nothing quite to replace living in a Buddhist community, especially for people who are seeped in it, from childhood on. That was such a blessing. I mean, my early days, you know, long time ago, early 70s, living with Tibetans in McLeod Ganj. It's simply a village. I mean, there are a lot of monks there, but it really is also just a village. And seeing just in the community, it's just, frankly, in a way, it's just an ordinary community. There are all kinds of people there. A lot of monks, but a lot of just ordinary people of all kinds. All refugees, of course, every single one, except for a few Indians here and there. And what you would see would be, what I saw, I mean, it just comes up like just something totally normal, is if one of these Tibetans, they're just villagers, they're nomads, they're just totally ordinary Tibetans, villagers, you know. If they would see something, someone, some sentient being suffering, so often, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. I'm not talking about the great saints and yogis of the village, I mean the ordinary people. Om Mani Padme Hum, Ga Nyin Che, Om Mani Padme Hum. That's normal. That's normal. That meant a lot to me. So, but we're not Tibetans. We weren't raised in Tibet. We weren't raised with Om Mani Padme Hum, with our mother's milk. Kind of wish we had been. At least I wish I had been, but I can't have nothing to complain about. I have very wonderful parents. But it occurred to me in the last meditation, just kind of like bubbles popping up to the surface of the mind, that there are many doors. There are many doors to the Dharma. It's a good thing, because there's many sentient beings. So here are just some musings, some rambling musings of my mind. Maybe useful, maybe not. But it won't take too much time anyway. And that is, especially during my lifetime, in Dharma the last 45 years or so, living in India, living in Switzerland, having a number of great lamas coming through there, having opportunity to serve as their interpreters, translating for His Holiness and so forth. But many Dharma friends, people like, so many. Jesuit Tenzin Pomo and Machi Ricard and Sangye Kando and, the list goes on. I mean, Westerners that I've known been practicing for 40, 50 years, you know, they really are practicing. A number of these of my generation and a little bit older, although there aren't many who are a lot older, some of these people have had the extraordinary opportunity to be directly and very personally trained under really extraordinary beings like Khalar Rinpoche and Gyawa Kamapa and Yantan Rinpoche, Dujum Rinpoche, Dingo Kenzi Rinpoche, Ling Rinpoche, Kyabche Tijan Rinpoche, Chopke Tijan Rinpoche, you know, just lamas, when you meet them, you kind of like, if you're at all open, you're just like, whoa, I've just come into the presence of something really sacred. Maybe there's more, I mean, there's really quite, most of them pass away by now, but Tushik Rinpoche, Toko Urgyen Rinpoche, so many. And for those really fortunate Tibetan and Western disciples who are able to come under the direct guidance, not just see them from afar, then for such people, you know, when you encounter such beings who, you're not just imagining things, this is the real deal. These people really have the realization. They're as great as any of them, any of those from the past. Many times they're reincarnations of great ones from the past. When you are in the presence of such people, many who, whether Tibetan, it doesn't make any difference at this point. I mean, that which is sacred, holy is holy, Tibetan or Westerner. When you're in the presence of and you receive the guidance, the attention, the blessings, the personal advice from such a being, you, for many people, they feel, I've encountered Milarepa, I've encountered Padmasambhava, if that's not Tara, who would be Tara? You know, they don't need to really think beyond the being that they're in the presence of whom they are, you know. And so their refuge is really, it is in this guru. I simply see this guru as Padmasambhava, as Tara, Avalokiteshvara. That's how I see. I mean, this is an incredibly realized being. And I don't even think about anything. This guru is the Buddha. I've read this many times. People say, I met such and such a lama, and I could not think of that lama as being anything other than a Buddha. Just, there it was, you know. So that's one door. Not everybody has that opportunity, but some people do. And when that happens, their door, when they're practicing Guru Yoga, When they're following the path, it's very much centered on their guru as Buddha, and it's not contrived. They don't feel they're actually imagining anything. They're simply kind of getting it. This is the nature of the guru I have. And this guru has actually achieved, you know, such profound realization. So that's one door. That's one door. Not everyone, of course, has such enormously good fortune to be a close disciple of such an extraordinarily realized beings, but some do. And so for them, between Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, and Nimanakaya, the Nimanakaya is their guru. That's the focus, that's their devotions. Whenever they think of the guru, they think of their own guru. They don't really need to think of Tara or Padmasambhava form. They think of their own guru, and that's enough. My guru is Padmasambhava. He doesn't have to look like that. My guru looks like Padmasambhava, because Padmasambhava looked like him or her, whoever it may be, you know. So that's one approach. That's one approach that works for many people. It's worked for centuries. But it's not the only approach. If for those people who do not have such good fortune to be under the direct guidance of such a profoundly realized being, truly one of the great ones, like, you know, I've just mentioned some of the names. But we've seen this also true. For some people, they just hear about Tara. They just hear about Tara. They read about Tara. They learn about Tara. They are introduced. They get maybe the empowerment, the sadhana, and just their heart sings. And really, just that's what inspires them. Tara, the very embodiment of the compassion of all the Buddhas in a delightfully, wonderfully, thank goodness, feminine aspect, which we desperately need in this world. That's just my opinion, but I think we desperately need more of the manifestations of the feminine. Because we're just way overboard on macho, that's my view. Way overboard on too many men in positions of power. You know, I just think so, really. The women won't make everything great, but at least it'll be a bit more balanced. How many women have started a world war, really? How many women have conducted genocide? How many women have butchered other people's children? How many women have firebombed a city and killed 100,000 people in one night? Intense. But it happened, of course. Tokyo, one night. 100,000 people. Children burned. How can we imagine that? How can we imagine doing that to anyone? Well, men can. I think it's harder for women to imagine doing that. They're more often the burnt than the burners. So, where was that? For some people, it will be a Manjushri. It's Buddha Shakyamuni. It's Tsongkhapa. It's Padmasambhava. And that's where the heart sinks. They're looking more at the Sambhogakaya level, the pure archetypal level, absolutely real. And that just stirs their heart. That's where the devotion is. And Tara's never apart from them. It's not like meeting and then going someplace and Tara's left behind. So for some people, that's the door that really opens the heart. And that's good. It's good enough. And then there's the Lama who gave you the empowerment. And you say, oh, Lama, you're indivisible from Tara. Thank you. And thank you, Tara. And you're really focusing on Tara. And the human being, good. Manifesting there, good. But the one who's always with me, who's my with me when I'm alive, when I'm dying, when I'm in the bardo, this is Tara. This is Padmasambhava, this is Manjushri, whoever it may be. So that's a second door, it's not quite the same. And for that one, frankly, any qualified lama will be good enough. Really, good enough. Good enough. Indivisible from Tara, good. Indivisible from Padmasambhava. Even ordinary lama, just merely qualified. Good enough. And then there are those for whom the door is really Dharmakaya. What really makes the heart sing is the door of awareness itself. X marks the spot, just slipping right through, right into the formless, right into Rigpa, right into pristine awareness. And that's it. That's where the devotion is. I mean, Dzogchen's been saying all along, Garap Dorje, Padmasambhava, Vimalamitri, they've been saying all along, your ultimate refuge is your own Rigpa. So for some people, that's the door. And it's good enough. And Padmasambhava then is, Padmasambhava himself, the historical Padmasambhava himself is a carrier of the light. Himself a transmission, himself a person who is passing on the teachings, telling you about your innermost refuge, your own pristine awareness. And the teacher that you directly encounter, again, a conduit, all leading to ultimate refuge, your own Rigpa. So for some people, that's the door. And it's good enough. And it occurred to me later in the meditation also that just to exemplify this point, to point maybe it's not just my own idle ramblings, but out of the five Dzogchen classics revealed by Dzogchen Lingpa, two of them, very concise, the Sharp Vajra of Conscious Awareness Tantra, it's only 10 pages, but then his own wonderful and utterly marvelous oral commentary written down about 100 pages, but there it is, it's the whole path. It's a complete path, start to finish, whole path, in 10 pages. Expanded generously to 100 pages in his commentary. But then another one, I've never really taught it, I've taught just the beginning of it. The Enlightened View of Samatabhadra, Kunduzambhagumbha. That's about 80 pages, or Tashotan Jibchitambhade. And that's a whole path, it's the same thing, whole path. No references at all to 100,000 this, 100,000 that. He just basically goes right into it. And really great in the nature of the mind. This goes right there. And then Shamatha Vipassana, cutting through to Rigpa, and the Tutgel, the direct crossing over. That's all that's taught. And this Enlightened View of Samatabhadra, the entire path, and there it is, boom, right there, 80 pages, complete. And then condensed down just to 10 pages, but the same material, just taught slightly variations, subtle variations. Sharp Vajras of Conscious Awareness, down to Shirdi Dorje Nyingpa Gyu in Tibetan. And in these two, which are very clearly, I mean unequivocally, they are complete paths. It doesn't say, oh, by the way, you know, look there. No, that was it, start, that was all. There's no reference to state regeneration at all. There's no reference to visualizing this. There's no reference to mantras at all. It just boom, right down. Like a Maserati getting in the fast lane of the Autobahn. And pew, little right blinker going blink, 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 blink. Get out of my way. Really straight. Really, really straight. No elaborations. Drupadan Derwa. No elaborations. And what's remarkable here is that with essentially no references to any deities as such, just Padmasambhava giving Dzogchen Lingpa teachings. Padmasambhava was his teacher, right? I'll just give this little sneak preview of the direct crossing over, the Tutgel. I won't teach you how to do it. There's no need, no value in doing that right now. But what really comes out, which is quite remarkable, and I have to say I have very deep faith in it, is as you're following this straight track, I mean, that's it. It's going right in nature of awareness, in nature of mind, taking the mind as your path to the substrate consciousness, taking Dharmadhatu, or Dhammata, ultimate reality, as your path to itself, to realizing emptiness, and then Rigpa as your path to becoming Vidyadhara. I mean, it's just this straight, unadorned, formless path of just awareness to awareness to awareness. And then you come to this culminating one. Once you are resting in Rigpa, pristine awareness, then you engage in these practices. Just that, these practices of direct crossing over. And spontaneously, effortlessly, with no visualization whatsoever, all five of the Buddha families appear. Vairochana, Amitabha, Akshobhya, Ratnasambhava. Dhamma City. And they appear they appear spontaneously. Each in its own mandal, each with their own consort, each surrounded by a circle of bodhisattvas. The five Buddha families, they appear, they actually flood the whole space of Dharmakaya, and they're happening spontaneously. No visualization, no culture, no nothing except for a spontaneous effulgence displays right out of the Dhamma Dhatu, viewed from the perspective of Rigpa. These are, one can say, ultimate archetypes, not of some collective unconscious, not of your substrate consciousness, but these are just these quintessential enlightened archetypes, each one an embodiment of one of the five facets of primordial consciousness, right? Primordial consciousness of Dhamma Dhatu, absolute space of phenomena. Primordial consciousness of discernment, mirror-like primordial consciousness, primordial consciousness of equality, primordial consciousness of accomplishment, all accomplishing primordial consciousness. These aspects, like shining a light through a prism and having it refract into five lights, the five facets of primordial consciousness then taking on form. We've seen it before, it happens everywhere. That which is formless takes on form that is purely but profoundly transcendentally symbolic. Vairochana is not simply some artifact of Indian culture, let alone Tibetan culture. And likewise for the others. There's something deeper going on. It's not cultural. So even if your route is not, you know, having this profound reverence and devotion and deep movement of the heart towards your actual physical guru, and perhaps not to any of the archetypal forms like Avalokiteshvara and so forth, even if your path is just straight right on through awareness, you get the deities for free. They're going to come to you sooner or later. There's the easy way, there's the hard way. You know? They come, they manifest. And then you yourself, when you're finished, you are the Dharmakaya. But then you too will manifest as Sambhogakaya. And then you too will manifest in any way necessary. So that's it. So it's good we have multiple doors. And we shouldn't feel bad about ourselves that we're not going through another door. There's a door. Find your door. Walk through it. Let's read a little bit more. So we've had Kamachamaramachi's own narration, his explanation, which I read through during the session, of this very simple practice, very much to the point, no frills, in his own words. But then there's something which is much better in the Tibetan, but you know, at least I think the English translation is correct, even though the verse, the beauty of it as verse is gone. And so he says himself, Kamachamaramachi says, these verses written down by our Lord Kunjo Yenla were received by Raga Ase. Raga Ase is the personal name of Kamachamaramachi. So he is Raga Ase, and his guru, one of his gurus, was Kunjo Yenla. So he received from his guru these verses, the sadhana in verse of Avalokiteshvara. I received more than 40 times from the father's spiritual mentor and his two spiritual sons, so two principal disciples of his guru. So they have an extraordinarily great blessing. And then he simply shares it with us. So I gave you his prose version here, we'll just read through. Now be familiar, nothing will be new here. And again, if we all spoke Tibetan, I would just love it to read in Tibetan, but I don't even have the Tibetan with me, so I can't do that. So here's the sadhana again, let's just read it through, it's quite simple. And imagine this in lovely verse, in metered verse. Bring forth the aspiration for supreme enlightenment and imagine your consciousness as the white syllable Hri. Rays of white light are emitted, purifying the sins and obscurations of all sentient beings. The outer universe is a palace and its inhabitants are deities. The light rays are withdrawn and dissolve into the Hri. Upon a lotus sun and moon seat, the syllable Hri melts into light, which transforms into yourself as the great compassionate one. The color of your body is white and you have one face. Like a blossoming lotus, you are smiling radiantly. The braids of your locks are bound up, adorned with the crown of five precious substances and a silken diadem. The first two of your four hands are pressed together at your heart. The lower right holds a pearl rosary, and the lower left holds a lotus by the stem, of course. You are beautifully adorned with a throat ornament, a collar band, neck band, necklace, and semi-necklace of various precious substances. You are luminous with no outer or inner obscurations. You are seated with both legs crossed. Various rays of light shine out. This is the nature of the Samayasattva. So that's your outermost display. Analogous to Nimanakaya. Upon a moon disc at your heart, the six syllables circle clockwise around a white syllable, Hri. This is the Samadhisattva. So analogous to the Sambhogakaya. By the power of verbally reciting Om Mani Padme Hum, all the Sugatas of the three times become of the nature of the Great Compassionate One and dissolve into you like raindrops. That is the fully perfected Jnana Sattva. There we go to the essence. The being, the very embodiment of Jnana, Yeshe, primordial consciousness. The whole universe, and so there you are, you're focused upon yourself in the center of this mandala. You are the center of the mandala. But then, again, we've done this so many times, you remember. There you are, resting in this luminosity of your own embodiment. And yet the light illuminates the entire environment, the entire universe around you, and illuminating with this pure vision, pure appearances, the whole universe and all its inhabitants become the deity from your perspective. From the perspective of pristine awareness, there are only pure appearances for your mandala in which you are the center. Phenomena, appearances, this is forms, are the presentation of the divine body. All sounds and voices are the six syllables. Sounds are the presentation of the divine speech. And the mind is the self-arisen union of appearances and emptiness. And memories and thoughts are the presentation of the divine mind. So then you're viewing, again, body, speech, and mind from the perspective of pure vision, which you visualize until you have actually identified pristine awareness, and your view of reality is from the perspective of pristine awareness. So you visualize it, you imagine it, until the skillful means of the state of degeneration primes you, prepares you to see that which you are imagining, but see the reality that is uncontrived, primordial, already present. And it was the approximation that led you to the doorstep so you can cross over and see that which was already there. So that's the point. I'm just remembering as I was reading that, I just tell you whatever comes to my mind. But in the Vajra Essence, the first of the five Dujum Lingpa classics on Dzogchen, this one that Gyatro Rinpoche taught me quite carefully. It must be there. It has to be there instilling in the mind that Dujum Lingpa says that he said, I practiced a bit of stage of generation, you know, a bit. And then he just had this pure vision of primordial Buddha, Samatha Bhadra, manifesting as Padmasambhava, the lake-born Bhadra, surrounded by a circle of disciples. And he's like watching a 3D cinema, you know, pure vision. He's just seeing this all appearing in the space of his mind. And oh, by the way, he's broken through to Rigpa. So he's seeing it from the perspective of Rigpa, right? And he's seeing this display of Padmasambhava teaching this circle of disciples, and they're asking him questions, and they're going back and forth in dialogue, teachings, questioning, almost debating, going back for 400 pages. And he's attending to the whole thing. And yet in the midst of all of that, it's all a play. It's like a play in a playhouse. It's a play. It's a play from Samantabhadra's perspective, because from that perspective, all these disciples are simply his own emanations. From his perspective, they're already awake. So we're going for the play. We're doing this playful, all right, I'll take on the role of being the Buddha, and you take on the role of being the Bodhisattva, and now it's on your mind, and I'll spontaneously respond to your questions. But it's all a play. So the stage regeneration practice that he did prior to that simply purified his mind, prepared him for seeing something that was not imagined, spontaneously arising. And teachings, because here he is still, here he is as one of, you know, emanations of the 25 disciples of Padmasambhava. Gyu Chung La Tsawa. The boy translator. Quite young, he's a translator. One of the 25. And so in a way, it's still a play. Because he's having this vision in which he's receiving the teachings and writing them down and then sharing with others. But then his mind, his own mind, is inseparable from the mind of Padmasambhava. So it's all a play. I'm completely empty. Nothing more to say tonight. So, let's just dedicate merit for a couple of minutes, just quietly.